like a mofo. But everybody wants to try to keep a low, bro.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome to the circus.
Am I the only one who goes about it through the night? Am I the only one who doesn't wear in the sky? Because if I can't break it and I can't change it, then tell me how will I know? Am I the only one that isn't just here for the show?
Welcome to the circus.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to this 4 p.m. edition of the Sam Taylor Report. It's going to be a busy one in about 15 minutes. I'm going to have, former attorney, one of President Trump's attorneys. He needs like 90 of them. Peter Tichtenberg, he's going to be joining me in 15 minutes. A couple things I'm going to say. Mershon right now is poised. He could pull a dirty trick. And a constitutional attorney who I admire that, you know, unfortunately my team won't let me bring him on because he's a leftist. They won't let me bring him on, meaning, you know, he's just a leftist and just not good for us. But constitutional attorney Alan Dershowitz has said that Mershon can bring a dirty trick, and he's going to need one right now because we are headed in the trial of the just epic, epic proportions. The trial, it's verdict watch right now. Mershon's got a dirty trick. He's going to need one because we're headed for a hung jury right now. The jury, if they were going to convict all 12 to 1, they would have done so by now. So Alan Dershowitz's commentary. Before we go to that, let me share a couple of things with you that I think you'll enjoy that are appropriate as we wait to bring Peter Tichtenberg on. Here we go.
Usually, the mentally retarded are divided into classifications. The educable, the trainable, and the custodial. Obviously, we can only assess the abilities or potential of the mentally retarded on an individual basis. Seemingly random motions and movements are fairly common among the custodial retarded, and they may take many forms. Sometimes there are motions which seem to have no meaning whatever and may even cause unintentional self-inflicted injuries. The vast majority of the mentally retarded are intelligent enough that they can be taught a great many things. However, there's a wide range of ability even among those considered educable. And their ability to learn obviously varies according to their level of intelligence. Equally important is a stimulating environment. However, we must remember to set realistic standards that are not too high for the individual. Many of the trainable retarded can learn to take certain kinds of household responsibilities, some of which may be more complex than they are usually given credit for. It would be wrong to expect a mentally retarded person to become a master craftsman. The standards are too high. But even in the skilled trades, for example, the mentally retarded can be trained to become valuable assistants. Who are the mentally retarded? They are people. They come in both sexes and in all sizes, shapes, creeds, and colors. Wherever people live, there also live the mentally retarded.
Another great piece by the Dilly Meme Team, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you for joining us here today. Earlier this afternoon, Donald Trump was arraigned by a Manhattan grand jury on 34 felony counts.
This case is an abomination. You know, it's obviously political. 7 years to try to come up with this case. They're just wrong on the law.
The only crime that Donald Trump is being prosecuted for is the crime of running for president.
Political persecution at the highest level.
They've quite frankly given up on trying to beat him at the polls. Either going to steal it or stop it by law firm.
A Democrat prosecutor elected on a get Trump platform.
What's going on here is a disgusting disgrace. It is war on Trump. It is war on the Republican Party. And it is a war on a republic.
This case is the weakest case I've seen in 60 years of teaching, practicing, and writing about criminal law.
And I doubt the New York indictment would have been brought against a defendant whose name was not Donald Trump.
This judge, I mean, you don't need a prosecutor if you have a judge like this. This judge is not on the level.
It's a terrible case, but the judge has been pretty much a rubber stamp on everything that Bragg has wanted to do.
They're perverting the system of justice. You know, that's where the danger lies. The corruption and subversion of our institutions by the left.
This is the Democrats' entire strategy, to confine President Trump to a dirty criminal courtroom and keep him off the campaign trail where he can bring his winning message to voters across this country.
New York has become a legal banana republic. They are so determined to get Donald Trump.
Look, convicting Donald Trump, that's all they have.
I think they have no cards, and they're depending upon Trump getting convicted.
That Trump train doesn't show any signs of slowing down.
The only verdict that matters is the verdict at the ballot box.
Yeah, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. And we have a live feed right now. This is officially Verdict Watch, probably the most important verdict in the history of our country. There can be no doubt about it. No doubt about it. What's at stake here is so huge. Now, of course, somebody who went to the military academy with President Trump, former attorneys, worked on cases with him. He's a lifelong friend. Peter Tichtin, one of my trusted go-to people to get some sanity and a perspective on things. Peter Tichtin will be joining us as we go to let's take a look at that live feed right now as we await the verdict. And I'm going to say this, it is the most important verdict in the history of our country, period. A lot at stake. I'm saying, and this is my honest layperson's perspective, I'm saying right now we're headed towards a hung jury, because if we were going to get 12-1, a slam dunk, they'd probably do a day, you know, maybe hype things up, do it on a Thursday instead of going to a Friday. But here we are late on a Thursday afternoon, and we don't have a verdict. Now, when I have this discussion with Peter Tichtin, who will be joining me here in just moments, you know, Alan Dershowitz says that there is a legal option right now that can be deployed by Judge Big Sham, Judge Mersham, wow, we'll call him, Judge Mersham, wow. It's so appropriate to call him this. This entire thing, they're so brazen. They want to get their pound of flesh. I mean, all he's pushing for is to ramrod right into an opportunity, because he knows he's going to get an appeal. There's so many appealable issues, like a slam dunk. There's no way that any conviction will ever be upheld. Because of how Judge Mersham Wow has conducted himself or misconducted himself in the courtroom. Now, I'm bringing somebody on who is calm, cool, collected, always. Somebody who's provided calm to me in all of the tornadoes that we've been through over the years. Attorney Peter Tichtin, to help bring some sanity to the madness that's going on. Mr. Tichtin, thank you. And I just want to make sure that you're unmuted here when you come on. So, sir, welcome back to the Peace and Silly Show.
Peter, it's really a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I mean, the when I say Mersham Wow, you know, that remember that Sham Wow commercial that used to be on at 3 o'clock in the morning. Remember that? That guy that he'd do that sham wells. I mean, this is what he's got going on in the courtroom. Now, from a layman's perspective, I mean, I understand when a judge conducts himself in the fashion that he does, just with the jury instructions alone. I've never heard of such a thing where you can do this buffet style, you know, mix and match. Whatever happened to beyond a reasonable doubt, all 12 people in the box are to weigh in and convict. He said, no, we can mix and match. It's like a, you know, a bucket of beads, you know.
I've never heard of anything like this before. I've never, you know, before my life as a civil lawyer, the first 4 years of practice, I was a defense counsel. And so, you know, I understand how it all works. And you know, there's a certain, you know, I won a case one time. This was in Ontario, Canada, where they gave my client, he was driving down a one-way street and not watching where he was going, smashed into the truck ahead of him. That's driving without due care and attention. It's careless driving by definition. And he was charged with careless driving, but I noticed on the form that it also included the offense of speeding, because it made it easy, you know. So he did commit the offense of speeding or careless driving, and because they combined two different
offenses. Mr. Tickton, if you could, we've got a live feed right now to President Trump coming out of the courtroom. Hold on one second. This might be breaking news as you come on. Let's see what we have here. And, you know, this isn't an interruption. This is breaking news right now. Now, Peter, I've called this. This is probably this is the most important verdict in the history of the United States, I believe.
Yes. And that's part of what I was going to talk about, was the fact that what this really is part of the entire takeover of the country. This is just a piece of what's going on. And for them to put Donald Trump through this, I mean, it, you know, to me, it just breaks my heart and it makes me angry. It's a whole plethora of feelings and emotions that I and most people that realize what's going on here. But at the same time, it's revealing.
Can you tell
the government really is?
Yeah, the government is out of control. I mean, it's actually almost anarchy on that side of the political spectrum.
We've been taken over, and you know, we got to get our country back, but we have been taken over. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Justice Department can't be weaponized by people that aren't in control. Mm-hmm. They are in control. They've taken our country, and they're destroying it. And this is just a piece of it, but it's you know, if you knew Donald Trump, is, like, I know him really well. I mean, I lived with him.
And hold on just one second. I need you to lift Peter's audio up just a little bit. Peter, you're okay at your side. If you could just lift his audio up. Angie was just letting us know. Peter, can you do us a favor and tell everybody here, and by the way, can you stay with, it's a short show, it's only a 1 hour segment on LFA TV. We've got brand new viewers. Can you just give everyone just a thumbnail? You've known President Trump for a long time, correct?
Tell since everybody. You
were 15 years old, and you've even handled some of his cases.
I'm the guy that filed the suit against Hillary Clinton and Deborah Wasserman Schultz, and you name them, the 31 people we sued that were all involved. Mm-hmm. With the that Russian collusion BS.
Yep, you know, that's right. That's the famous one I was referred to that references Newstar 79 times. Newstar 79 times, interestingly enough. And they were so concerned.
My name, Alina Haba was the lead counsel on it, but I was definitely the they called me the lead local counsel.
Yes.
And I think that's coming back. I mean, don't think that suit's over just because we have one judge who would like to throw things out, that, you know, a judge who just didn't know truth from fiction.
Of course,
I don't want to say he's a dishonest man, but, you know, you take an honest man, you sit him down in front of CNN and NBC and CBS, that's his whole world.
Yes.
That's all he knows, and he doesn't know the truth. You know, Donald Trump says the press is the enemy of the people, and that's why. It's because people like Judge Middlebrooks get completely sold on facts that are false. And so, you know, I mean, what did he think? You know, the whole thing was fiction. Then where did the Steele dossier come from? You know, somebody snapped their fingers in midair. Nobody paid for it. Hillary Clinton paid for it. And we all know that.
That's right.
He doesn't know
it. Now, I refer, and you don't have to, of course, there's attorney client privileged information that you can't reveal and legal strategy. I do believe that case is coming. I actually have it always. Look at this. I have it in my binder, one of my three important three-ring binders. That RICO case is a critical case. And I don't believe there's any way, just the information alone, whether or not the legal case comes back, the information is going to come. Now, sir, I've also highlighted the timing of when they went after those subpoenas to go to Mar-a-Lago just coincidentally happened just a matter of several weeks after that RICO lawsuit was filed. I find that coincidental. There was important information. Well, you know, I don't want to speculate anything, but mentioning Newstar, what President Trump knows about some things that may be going on at Fort Washington, Maryland, is what I'm trying to make the connection to, but that's to be determined later on. Anyways, sir, so your experience with President Trump, he even dates back to, you went together at the military academy, correct?
Yeah, New York Military Academy. He was, in our senior year, we were together for most of the year until he got promoted. He was my captain. He made me his first platoon sergeant. We basically worked together. I joke and say I ran his first company for him, which was Company A.
Wow. But
I got to say, you couldn't find a better human being, a more concerned person for his cadets and for all the cadets in the Corps. He was just the epitome of a human being. I have nothing bad that I could possibly say about Donald Trump unless I want to make something up and lie about something, because he was always a good person. I mean, it wasn't like some days, be careful, he's in a bad mood or something. It was never like that. He's one of the most wonderful people that I have ever known. And you know something, I hear the same thing from people. I'm in New York right now, and I met with a friend of mine who basically said he had been one of Donald Trump's tenants, and we were in a room with other people that were not necessarily friends of his that were in this conversation, and he was basically sticking up for Donald. He said, you know, this man looked out for his tenants. It was one guy in the building that couldn't afford the layout that was required when you walk off the elevator on his floor, and Donald just didn't even tell him. He just did it for the guy, you know, things like that, and that's Donald Trump. And you hear so many stories about him this way, and you hear these crazy lies that never have any specifics about how he's going to take over the country and you'll never get elected again. There'll be no more elections. He's going to be like a king. I mean, that's not facts. That's craziness.
Absolute. Absolute.
That's all they have to offer.
Yeah, absolute insanity on the other side. And, you know, what's remarkable is that you know, as a matter of fact, they use the racist narrative. It's a false narrative, absolutely. Everything leading up to his candidacy,
again, I came from an age where people use the N-word, okay, all around me. You know, we actually had one teacher in our school that would talk that way. And so it wouldn't have been something horrible for a captain of a company to use that word. We didn't have any black people in our company. Our last year of school was the first year that there were some black cadets, but they were in another company down the way, and we heard somebody screaming some awful stuff one day, and that was just really bothered him, and it bothered me. But you would never hear that word out of his mouth ever. Back then when people talked that way. You know, Donald Trump being a bigot, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense at all.
No, and you know, and I'm not bringing this up.
Grandchildren, you know, he, the way he is with black people, you know, I mean, you know, he would be pretty upset with me if I said something ridiculous, you know, racist or something. We just weren't brought up that way, and it wasn't in him, it wasn't in me, it wasn't with the other cadets in our company. There might have been some in the school, but none that I ever knew of that were that way.
You know, I don't want to mention, you know, we're talking about this false narrative perpetrated by the other side. I don't want us to have the discussion to be defensive against it, because I think everybody is awakened to what they're doing. And now all of a sudden they're bringing up all the racist stuff. Why? Because he's losing the black and Hispanic vote. I mean, Biden is obliterated.
The beauty of this lawsuit is that it's exposing the left, the people that have taken over our government. It's exposing them for what they are. Anybody who's watching this is realizing that the, you know, you can say all day long, taken over the Justice Department, and they've militarized it, and they're basically using the Justice Department to go after their political opponents. And you can use all those words all day long. And those are concepts that some people get and some people don't. But when you actually display it and put it on television for everyone to see and on the internet, it's there. And it's not just me, because I know Donald Trump, that is so upset. Everyone I know is so upset about this. Even people on the left have to agree that there's something really wrong here. So they're exposing themselves for what they are with this, more than they ever bargained for. This thing is backfiring on them in the worst of ways, because it's really exposing the truth.
Yes, sir. Before we segue back to, I've had important legal questions that I have here. Alan Dershowitz brought up some really important points here. Do you believe that right now, if it was going to be all 12 jurors, they would do it pretty quick, within 24 to 48 hours, especially going into the weekend and stuff like that, they would be pressed for that. Do you believe that right now we're seeing indications that there's a hung jury, that there's somebody in there that's pushing back? They don't have unanimity.
It's hard to imagine there wouldn't be a hung jury if the jury is actually taking the task and doing it as well as they can, because some of these people are just gung-ho and they can't go home to their communities. They can't go home to their husbands or wives and say that they acquitted Donald Trump. I mean, there's all kinds of social pressure on some of these jurors that are part of the cabal. And, you know, that's part of what we're living with. That's part of what's taken this thing over. Some people call it a cabal or there's all kinds of different names that they have for it, a clan or whatever. But these people that are all so used to chanting the chant, it's not like they have an understanding of the facts. They have a belief of generalities, and they just know. I mean, because any one of these people, if you ever ask them questions, and we've seen a number of commentators and on various shows and so on that have actually asked these kinds of questions, and these people have no knowledge whatsoever. They can't answer questions. They just know what they know, which really means that they are just in belief. And belief is the enemy of knowledge. If you believe in facts that are without further inquiry, that's what I believe, then you're not going to have knowledge of the truth. You're just going to have your beliefs. And
yeah,
that's the problem with so many people on the left. And I'm sure that some of these jurors fall right in line with that. So those people are never going to get convinced. But then again, you've got those people, you got two lawyers on the jury, you've got a good assortment of different kinds of people across the spectrum, but that means you're going to have some people that are actually looking at it and realizing this man is as innocent as the day he was born. Donald Trump's not a criminal. I mean, we know that. We saw what happened with the the entire investigation and regarding the whole
Russian collusion.
Russian collusion, because they weren't looking for Russian collusion. They were looking for anything they could find. You had people like Weissman on Mueller's committee there. They spent $30 million looking for him spitting in the subway, anything that they could find, and they found nothing. How many people who are successful or who have that kind of money or one-thousandth of that amount of money, can you do that kind of in-depth examination and find nothing? Spend $30 million? That was the insurance policy that Strzok was talking about when he said, to his girlfriend in those texts. When he said that we have an insurance policy, and that was that they were going to get a special counsel to investigate. And because these people are crooked, they figured everybody's crooked. Because, people think that people think the way they think. That's just the way it is. Everyone looks, you and I and everyone else looks at the world through our own prisms. We may not want to, but we do.
We throw this term out, this coup d'etat. The Central Intelligence Agency, a rogue operation. If you look at the Russia collusion thing, everything leading up to the Mueller investigation was almost as if it was a reverse engineering of what they wanted. They wanted an indictment, and it looked like they set the stage with each and every element to be able to piece together justification for doing the investigation. But it was all driven by the Central Intelligence Agency and their overseas counterparts, right?
Well, John Kennedy is gone, for the same kind of reason. You need to have war if the people that get rich from war are going to get rich, or richer, I should say. And so, it's all part of what Eisenhower warned us about long ago. And so Kennedy had an inclination to get out of the war in Vietnam, and all of a sudden he's dead, and Johnson's in, and Johnson's not getting out of the war at all. He expanded it. And so, you got to look to the results of things to figure out who did it and, who had something to gain. And there's no question about how he was hated by the CIA.
So if we went down the list of times that they went after him, they investigated him, they tried him, they had two impeachment trials, and he was found to be not guilty of all the charges that they brought. They brought the full force of the government upon President Trump, and he's always came out, Teflon fashion. Nothing stuck.
For a little while it looked like I was going to be the one doing the suit on Michael Cohen. I read half his book, because then when that didn't turn out, then I didn't have to keep reading it anymore. And every time I would start reading his book, I felt I needed a shower. the sleaze of this guy just comes out of his own words. And so when you think that, all 12 jurors are going to buy into what he had to say, one of the most famous liars in the history of the United States. What this guy's going to say? This guy who records his clients' meetings.
Can you imagine?
Without letting them know. I mean, who does that? Nobody does that. He calls himself a fixer. What the heck is that anyway? Mm-hmm. I mean, this lying scumbag, Michael Cohen.
What is there to deliberate if their key witness is a known, documented, convicted serial liar? What, you have no witness when you impeach somebody?
I'll tell you
what
I think is going on there. And now, let me tell you, we all think, I've had, well over 100 juries, I've gone through this. I've had jurors that have taken a long time, jurors that have come out really quickly. In one case, it was 12 minutes, and that was a nice win. But, the fact is that you try to figure out how it's going, and in there. And also, I'm almost surprised that it's 12, because in Florida, it would have been 6. But in this day and age, most of the time, it's 6, unless it's capital punishment. So, but meanwhile, you have 12 jurors. You've got 12 different people that are in there. So you, whoever is taking the responsibility of being the foreman, or whoever is taking responsibilities of guiding the foreman, because sometimes, you know, even though you want to basically push things the way you want it to go, sometimes you can do it better from the back seat than by being the one that's actually steering. So, they know they have to get to, or they want to try to get to, the people that are holdouts. And they probably figure that from the start. So usually what I think happens is they take a poll, you know, who thinks he's guilty, who thinks he's innocent, right from the beginning. And then, and a lot of people probably have very strong feelings one way or the other as well. And so then they say, well, I'll tell you what, you know, let's take this poll. Let's figure out where we are, and wherever we are, even if everybody agrees, let's still go through the evidence and make sure that we do the right thing. So, you know, that's really what tends to go on, is the people that are steering the room, and there's probably people steering from each side, are looking to prove their points. So when they read something back or get something read back, it's to say, no, this is where we disagree on something. I mean, there's no reason to read something back if everybody agrees with the point. They're reading something back if they don't see eye to eye.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so the likelihood of this being a hung jury is pretty great. In fact, I think that most commentators thought that that would be the way it would be before the trial ever started, simply because of the nature of it.
Do you believe that there's a lot of appealable issues? Like, and I say slam dunk from a layman's perspective, because I'm like, there's no way that they could ever uphold a conviction.
And, you know, the thing is, when you start making jury instructions that don't make any sense and that are obviously, you know, against the innocence of the prosecutor, it's no longer somebody being prosecuted, somebody being persecuted. That's really what's going on here. It's an attempt at persecution. God help us if they come out and convict this man. I don't know how the country's going to react to it.
I just don't think it's, you know, either way, really, our nation has been changed forever just through this process alone. I want to go to some commentary that Alan Dershowitz made. This is a scary thought. If there's one holdout in the room, there's just one person that says, there's no way, I'm not going to convict. He's on our side, or she's on our side, and that's all there is to it. Alan Dershowitz said that Mershon, has the option to remove that juror and replace him with an alternate. He said legally he can do that. He's seen it done before. It's a dirty trick that's available to him. Can you imagine if he did something like that? And I say this.
I didn't think you could do that. I don't think you can even make inquiries as to who the holdout is.
Huh. That's interesting. I was just wondering if that was even a possibility, because Dershowitz says that option is available. He's seen it done before. He said that if a juror was keeping the 12-member panel from reaching a verdict and refused to budge, a determined judge may seek to have that person removed. That would be explosive. But I bring this up because, does it not seem that they're so, like, with reckless abandon? He knows he's going to be appealed on certain things that he's doing in the court. But it looks like they want to get their pound of flesh. They want to get that conviction and then let him go to an appeal because, you know, Biden's already preparing a statement. They get the conviction. This is going to be on appeal. And then we're going to have to contend with whether or not he puts him in jail pending appeal. That's another step. Is that all a possibility?
It's all a possibility. In fact, Biden's already indicated, I understand, I didn't hear him say it myself, but it's been told to me that he's indicated that he's not going to continue the Secret Service in the event that he's incarcerated.
Are you kidding me?
I can't swear to it, because this is told to me from a number of sources, but that, I mean, really, what would he do? How would he have them in there? What kind of housing would he have for them? What kind of, where would he put them? How would that work?
Can the president of the United States remove?
You're supposed to be safe anyway.
Can he remove Secret Service protection?
This is one of the scariest parts of it. You know, one of the most frightening parts of the whole thing for me is, you know, when Donald walks away from this in the event that he's successful and he wins, then we don't know what the next tricks are. We don't know whether it's something that's coming from we don't know how it's going to go. But, you know, that's where you have to go back. You have to put this thing in perspective because they're all moving parts of the same thing. And so we can look all day long at this one moving part, but it's a distraction to some extent of everything else that's going on. I mean, we know that we have mounting numbers, and you hear more and more. I'm so happy to hear more and more people are saying things like this. Even Donald Trump said, you know, like it almost looks like there's foreign infantry. He didn't use these words, but he basically was saying that these people are in this country.
Now they Peter,
look like fighting men.
If you don't mind, that's pretty stunning what you said, because you, I don't know you to be somebody to just float internet rumor out there. You had somebody who may have a source or is a source that would be pretty serious enough for you to even mention that horrifying thought that Biden is considering removing Secret Service.
It's a horrifying. So I just don't see them murdering him in prison the way that you know that we've seen before. So
yeah,
I mean, you know, we
can.
I mean,
can you imagine we're even anybody. We're even having this discussion? I'm almost leaning towards they're looking to provoke. You know, the powder keg that we're sitting on. They want to provoke us. They want us to act out. And they're acting so outrageously that it's getting to the point to where we have no choice but to,
well, that, you know. That is true. And so, you know, that's a good thing to discuss.
Because, yes.
You know, a lot of people hear what we discuss. And so the point is, no matter what happens, for God's sakes, we don't want anybody giving them reason or cause to you know, institute martial law. So no matter what happens, it's not a time to take to the streets. We know that if the Trumpsters take to the streets, we know what they did on January 6th to us, and they're going to do it again. So, you know, it's absolutely imperative that we all behave ourselves in their eyes. You know, although they could always, you know, manufacture what they want.
Okay, then let's have the most serious discussion as to how we respond. And saying that we're going to vote in November, you know, there's so many things that can happen between now and then. Not taking to the streets, even if peaceful. I mean, what if we just, you know, I mean, we have to do something to shut them down, like not spend money. Everybody just go to the streets and stand there shoulder to shoulder peacefully.
If they would do what they did on January 6th. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things many people don't know about me, I don't know whether I mentioned it to you before, on January 6th, I was the one marshaling the evidence of what had occurred there, and it is nothing at all like anybody thinks that it was. You know, I've seen videos of Zoom meetings of people from Homeland Security who were planning January 6th, 6 months before the election. So this was not something that happened. You know, if you look at the videos, and I've watched hours and hours and hours and hours, it was like drinking from a fire hose, how much it was coming into me. And you see all these innocent, wonderful people there. They're there to pray. They're there to celebrate our country. And they're there to protest the fact that the election was stolen. But they were doing it peacefully. And then not the Capitol Police, but the Metropolitan Police start bombarding them with concussion bombs and with tear gas bombs. And you know, you have all these innocent people that are gathered becoming outraged because they're being attacked, physically attacked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they say nobody died or no police officers died on January 6th, but we know, and everybody knows about Ashley Babbitt, but do they know about Roseanne Boylan, you know, who was beaten to death And you can see this police officer hitting her with her stick, not just until she was dead, but after she was dead, blow after blow after blow. You see people that were running around the building to and looking like Trumpsters, you know, but really, you know, about a third of those ran around the building. And I don't know if you remember seeing this one guy with a 2x4 that's breaking a window. That guy with the 2x4, you know, I have sources that basically did facial recognition on him, and he's the same exact. He's a member of the Ukrainian army. So why is he a Ukrainian? And about a third of those people were the Ukrainian broadcasting company. So I mean, you know, what was going on there is not at all what anybody thinks was going on there.
So you thought the 2x4 guy
going to do this? What's that?
The 2x4 guy was Ukrainian.
He was a Ukrainian army.
Wow. And Sergey Dubinin, he was out front. He was pictured and identified. The FBI sat down the Q shaman. I don't know if you remember. Right?
Yeah, innocent bumpkin.
Yeah, innocent yeah. bumpkin. But he took a picture with him. The FBI sat down with him and identified
him. They were walking together. You know, they're following him. He's peaceful. Everything's fine. And they're trying to accommodate him. That's what we'll see again.
We just got an announcement. They reached a verdict.
Oh my God!
We just got an announcement. They reached a verdict.
Yeah, we're standing by for the jury.
Right now, there's Alina Haba on this. Alina Haba just came out of the door. I'm just getting word. They have reached a verdict. Wow. Peter, stay with me.
Okay, so it's not going to be a hung jury.
It's not going to be a hung jury? No, it's not. They've reached a verdict.
They reached a verdict that's out the window. It's a verdict. It's either not guilty or it's guilty, and God bless Donald Trump, please, for God's sakes.
Oh, my God. Okay. Mm-mm-mm. They have reached a verdict, ladies and gentlemen. Just lost my earpiece here. Let's do this. We're going. Looks like there's some movement here. Hold on just one second. Let's see the flurry. We don't have very positive looks on the people that have come. I'm just making just general observations here. Okay,
so here is something you watch for when a jury's coming back. Okay. Do they look at your accused? If they look at your accused, that's a really, really good sign. If the jurors come back and they look at Donald Trump, that would probably mean automatically that it's not guilty. If they come back and they're avoiding eye contact and they don't look at Donald Trump, it doesn't mean that it's a verdict guilty. It just means that they're not looking at Donald Trump.
Wow, what? Imagine imagine the possibilities here. This is kind of stunning. We're looking. They went to get President Trump. Obviously, he was out of the courtroom. They went to get him. Now, I saw Alina Haba come out, and she had a very serious look on her face, but that means nothing, does it?
No, because she doesn't know. Nobody
knows, right?
No. What happens is the jurors come back out. They'll have selected a foreman. The foreman will have the paper, the verdict form. And you see in the movies, he's always the one that reads it. And so, no, that doesn't happen that way. The foreman then gives the verdict form to the bailiff or the deputy, whatever they call him in New York.
Yep.
And then that bailiff will give that to the judge, and the judge will review it and look it over to see if there's anything that doesn't make sense. If it were a civil case, they'd be looking to see whether the numbers add up correctly and so on.
Yep. We're listening to the audio feed right now of CNN.
The jury foreman, four-person, juror number one, will be the one who kind of verbalizes this. But the judge will go through the list and ask each juror to confirm, yes, this is your verdict, whether it's guilty or not guilty.
What this?
Yeah, what you just described is called polling the jury, and that happens second. So first, though, they'll actually read the verdict to each count.
Okay, President Trump is in the courtroom. I guess he must have gone in through a different
room. Ask them if it's true that that was the verdict that they had rendered. The reason that is done is because it has to be a unanimous verdict. Each and every juror must agree. And defense likes the individual jurors polled at the end of the case. It's a guilty verdict.
I will say this, that if in fact he's found guilty and he goes to jail, he will be president of the United States. What do you think?
He should be. And I think so. Yeah. You know, one of the things I've been working with different people on is getting the voter rolls down. I mean, we now know more about how the cheating was done before. And how at the last minute they come in with a whole bunch of new entries to be put on the voter rolls, and then they have those names. You see, you can only build the system to a certain extent, and that's based on the voter rolls. And some people have basically said that's part of the reason that we've had so many people come into the country, because now we have these names. And so somebody can add those names and phone number, you know, the identification, whatever, put those people on the voting rolls. And then they can make up the false ballots, because they can't just make up a whole bunch of false ballots. They have to be ballots of people that are on the voting rolls. And so that's where it gets a little, you know, hairy in terms of how they're going to cheat this time around. But those voter rolls have been challenged by a lot of people looking at them. And the people in charge of these are not going to get away with it so easily.
Now, I'm going to ask you something. This is, you know, conspiracy theory, but we know what goes on. I'm from New York, so I know with organized crime, there's methods by which you can rig a jury. You can even take a jury. It doesn't matter how biased they are. And all of a sudden, you go in there, judges, jurors. If we're in a coup d'etat, is my question, and it's a CIA-led coup d'etat, is there a possibility that they could rig a jury to get a conviction? Because it seems like they wanted that all along anyway, right?
They didn't need to. They basically rigged it by getting the jurors that they got in the first place. You have a biased judge who's allowing challenges for cause to the defense, to people that would be good for the prosecution. They're keeping them for the people that would be good for the defense. They're getting them off. I mean, you asked me before about appellate rights. Well, there's so throughout the entire process, there's been many, right from the jury selection itself, that's reversible error with these decisions that were made by this judge.
Let's, if you don't mind, I just want to hear some commentary here.
No, by all means,
let's shut this down. I want to hear it, because there's a lot of flurry in the media, obviously.
Down. You will recall, we left yesterday with a little bit of a cliffhanger. The jury had some questions. They wanted to hear some testimony. They wanted to hear the instructions, which are lengthy and complex, as we have discussed at length. So they came back this morning. They heard testimony from two key witnesses, including Mr. Trump's former fixer, one of the key witnesses,
former
a star
fixer.
Witness for some in this case. They also heard some portions of testimony from David Pecker, the very first witness in this trial. Both of those men put the former president in the room where the prosecutors say this alleged conspiracy to try to corrupt the 2016 election happened. They heard that testimony, and then they were also given, Savannah, another round of instructions. They don't have the physical instructions in the room with them, but they were able to hear them orally. We saw many of them taking notes. They heard instructions about Michael Cohen in particular. Then they went back into the jury room, and we heard nothing. It was crickets for a while until we saw both the prosecution and the defense returning to the courtroom. The judge then took the bench, and then we understood from our team in the room there that the judge was informed that the jury does in fact have a verdict, and so we're now waiting, standing by. We were given about a 30-minute window in which to predict, in which they will come back in, they will all file in, and then history will be made in that room. Those 12 jurors, including two lawyers, a salesman, the foreman, somebody who's a speech therapist, all walks of life from New York City, returning this historic verdict soon.
Laura, let me ask you, could this be potentially, is there a mechanism for a split verdict here, keeping in mind there were 34 counts?
Sure, Lester, any different number of combinations is possible here. We have 34 felony counts, as you say, which are really 34 pieces of paper. Those are the physical business records. They span a year in 2016 in which prosecutors say invoices, checks, general ledger entries at the Trump Organization were all falsified. How were they falsified? They included certain language, which prosecutors say was essentially bogus language, creating a fake paper trail so that Mr. Cohen and the former president could cover their tracks so that they could disguise.
We are, I'm being told, okay, I'm being told I'm going to go long, going to go live right at 5. So we're going to cut at 5 o'clock to Sean Farish, but well, Peter, do you want to stay with me for the verdict?
Please let me.
Yeah, so we're going to stay long here. We'll come off of LFA TV, let Sean Farish cover that on the live stream on LFA.
With us, with Howie Jackson,
okay. Jeez, always on. I'm kind of stunned by this. I didn't expect this. Recovering legal analyst. I thought there was going to be some wrangling back and forth, like you said, when you get a hung jury and they said we can't.
I was. So here, let's take another crack at it. What does it mean to you that the jury has come back?
Almost certain there was going to be a hung jury, but if it's actually a verdict, you know, thinking about. The reality is, I just don't see certain elements that were on that jury. I just don't see them ever changing their mind about it. I don't know. I'm just hoping that I'm wrong.
Yeah, let's just hear the
Alvin Bragg. The judge has summoned everyone to the courtroom, and soon the judge will ask the foreman of the jury to confirm that the jury has reached a unanimous decision. Then the verdict on each of the 34 criminal charges against Mr. Trump will be read aloud in court, one at a time. Again, 34.
Alvin Bragg is in the courtroom now.
Of falsifying business records, each one pertaining to an individual check or an invoice or a voucher. All of the charges.
You know what? And we're just strictly speculating. Now, you've spoken to and had 100 juries. So what are the possibilities they come back and stun the world and say he's not guilty?
Let me put it to you this way. Every single jury trial I've done, whether it's one on court TV or whether it's one that's a small, you know, crime, one that's every single one, I advise my client before coming back into the courtroom, prepare for the worst. Even if we know we've won sometimes. I mean, you can't understand how we could have possibly lost. Nevertheless, you've got to always prepare because you're dealing with jurors and it's never predictable. You know, every commentator that says, I think it's going to be this, how many days, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. They all say also, we don't know. They don't know. They're just guessing. It's all out of their hat.
News right now.
You never know. I mean, right now we're sitting here. We don't know whether it's guilty or not guilty. We just don't know.
Yeah.
And I just want to prepare you and your audience for some horrible news.
Yeah.
And if I'm not saying it's going to be horrible news, I'm praying that it's not. But
yeah.
But you got to prepare for it. Because it's going to be a shock if that comes, and it's a shock that it's better to be prepared for.
And now, you know, I mean, I hate to gum it up. You know, this is a very, very serious verdict. But do you remember when the entire nation was just gripped? Captivated when the OJ jury verdict came. Remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, that was an important public trial. A lot of people learned about the courtroom, believe it or not. I mean, I certainly did. So
it changed the world in terms of domestic violence as well.
It did. It was an important verdict. This one right here is of that magnitude. So I remember how going into that, you just never knew because, I mean, we were in Los Angeles, the makeup of the jury. I mean, it could have gone anyway, right? To have gone anyway.
Yeah, no, and no, and to a lot of us, it was shocking. It was a surprise because you know he did it. But you know, over the years, I got to understand it a little bit differently too, because the man obviously was suffering from chronic traumatic encephalitis.
He said he was going to be sent.
He was a football player and hit in the head too many times.
Okay, judge's clerk has now entered the courtroom right now. So the clerk is now in the courtroom. What's the procedure? I mean, what does that mean? I mean, they get everything settled. The clerk is the one that ultimately opens up the envelope, correct? And reads
An envelope. Usually, maybe in New York they have envelopes, but it's not the it's going to be 8.5 by 11 paper that's been printed on that has the questions to it and in the style of the court.
Reimbursed
color. So
yeah,
you know, and those papers will be then they will have been signed by the foreman.
All right.
The questions will be answered.
Let me just take care of some homework. This is breaking news. What we're going to do is, of course, the LFA stream. We are going to turn off. I'm going to also, if you'll allow me here, as we get to the top of the hour, we're going to come off of LFA TV. Sean Farish is going to be covering. We are going to stay with Peter Tichtin for the announcement of the verdict because it's going to come within moments. So, Peter, if you'll stay with me. And this is a historic moment. I couldn't think of a better person to be riding shotgun with for this. As a matter of fact, I said, get Peter Tichtin on right about the time that the jury verdict may come, because I want his commentary at this time. And here it is. So Sean Farish coming up here in just moments. Let me go to the ABC news feed so we can hear their commentary, and then I'm going to get things settled here so we can cut over.
Live coverage here of the verdict in Donald Trump's criminal trial. You and I were on the air last night here, Dan, with those first two
requests
from the jury.
Just give us just a couple minutes here.
And they were somewhat telling. 4 hours in, a very specific request from those jurors to look back at testimony, to have testimony reread from David Pecker, a former publisher of the National Enquirer, of Michael Cohen, of
course,
Donald Trump's one-time lawyer and fixer, about, in particular, a meeting allegedly that took place at Trump Tower. All three men involved in that meeting, according to the testimony, in addition to phone calls and other testimony that they requested. But that particular request was somewhat telling. And what could have
Peter, just give me just a second here. I'm going to be off mic.
Right. So that's exactly what the prosecutors would have wanted them to start with. Right. Because from the prosecutor's perspective, this is a scheme that started in 2015. It started at the Trump Tower with a meeting between David Pecker and Michael Cohen and Donald Trump talking about how they would keep an eye out. David Pecker would keep an eye out for negative stories, that he would help pay for them. They would end up, quote, killing them. Catch and kill was the scheme. But the reason it's important that they asked for that readback is David Pecker was the corroborating witness for Michael Cohen. Right. Again and again, we talked in this case about Michael Cohen's credibility problems. And the prosecution's argument was, yes, he's got credibility problems. But we believe we have corroborated all the key elements of his testimony. And the beginning of that corroboration starts with the 2015 meeting where David Pecker and Michael Cohen are basically relaying the same account of how this all started. So that was definitely a good sign for prosecutors that was the beginning of the jury's deliberative process. Again, it was impossible to know exactly what it meant. Did it mean that they were following the prosecution's roadmap? Did it mean that there was some dissent on the jury?
And okay, ladies and gentlemen, Sean Farish coming up. We're coming off of LFA TV. Everybody else, stay with me.